Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
Welcome into the Deuce and Mo podcast. Kind of a bonus pod because it's been an interesting day in the NBA. And we have to talk some Zach LaVine too. Morgan Reagan. We are less than a week away from the draft.
Yeah.
And it feels like, oh, it's here. Right? The offseason's officially here. The finals are over. The Celtics are the champs. It's like, is anything going to happen today? JJ Redick gets the Lakers gig officially.
Yeah.
And Sam Presti makes a trade. Josh Giddey sent to the Chicago Bulls for Alex Caruso. And there's like Zach LaVine rumors too.
The NBA never stops.
Are you having fun?
I am. I definitely am. You know, I'm wanting more and more of the Sacramento Kings to be in the news for good things. So, you know, as things just keep ramping up, we get closer and closer to the NBA draft. Hopefully more things will happen.
I do want to mention a couple of things. We're going to be live for the NBA draft next Wednesday and Thursday, hanging out with instant reaction to all the picks. We'll also be live for NBA free agency. Anything big that happens, you know, we have it covered. Also, if you're bored and you need to look up players for the draft, I have a couple of names you should look up. Rob Dillingham and Bub Carrington.
If you're bored, I love that you say that. But honestly,
I've been diving into the draft.
I was going to say, haven't you been diving in? And I feel like a lot of people on our Deucemo Discord are always talking about these guys. You're always dropping little nuggets.
Just go ahead, go on YouTube and watch those guys. They're two guards, but man, if you're a Kings fan, do not ignore the possibility of adding a guard, especially because I'm working under the assumption Malik Monk is bye-bye.
Yeah.
Are you there with me?
I'm pretty much there. And I don't even think it's, I just think it's realistic, you know, or rational thinking.
And if he decides to stay, then we're like, whoa, yeah,
popping bottles. Wrong. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the big trade of today. Trade season is here. Sam Presti. You son of a bitch.
You're a mother.
You fucking ass.
My.
Like, what the f? All right. Sam Presti does it again. You know, the OKC Thunder, the young, up and coming OKC team, the number one seed in the West this past season.
Yeah.
Just made a trade. And it's a significant one. They trade Josh Giddey to the Chicago Bulls for Alex Caruso. No picks. OKC has 827 future first-round picks. The Bulls don't get any compensation back, and Alex Caruso lands with OKC. I mean, I don't think there's any other reaction, but like, wow, okay. OKC is even better defensively. They get a guy who could defend multiple positions, flat out dog, two-time all defensive team, can hit threes. Oh, they've got Lou Dort, SGA, Cason Wallace, defense everywhere. It's not fair.
I just love it that you started all that with them. I don't think there's anything else you can say, but wow. Okay.
Well, what I meant is like, it's a swing and a hit, a home run.
It seems to be all the things right now. And I think when the trade happened, there's been a few moments today. You called me as soon as, hey, JJ is going to be the next head coach of the Lakers. We'll get to that another time. And then, hey, Josh Giddey, Alex Caruso trade. Caruso, you know, going to OKC. And then you said, are you depressed? And it's not that I am depressed when I see something like this, because I am oh so happy for OKC. But I think when you look around the league, like with a move like this, and it happened, the NBA season just ended, the Celtics were crowned the champions, and boom, Sam Presti has been working. He has been doing stuff and he gets shit done. And I think when you are a fan around this league, you're just like, why can't my team do that? Why can't we get that done? This trade, it makes a lot of sense. You saw Josh Giddey in a lot of his flaws in the postseason.
Yep.
And, you know, he had all the other drama surrounding him throughout the year, but I don't even think this has much to do with that so much as has to do with him being played off the floor so many different times.
I also think it's this, Morgan. They were the number one seed last year, and I think they were content without making any crazy-ass move at the deadline. They had Gordon Hayward. It didn't work out for Hayward there, and he really didn't find a role. But now you take a step back and go, okay, I see what this group is capable of as a young team with their first real playoff experience. Is there a tweak? And we have an asset that, even though you can look at Giddey as maybe a distressed asset, maybe an asset that people are really down on right now, there's still some value, and maybe you could trade him for an expiring Alex Caruso. It's a no-brainer. It's a way for OKC to elevate their team.
Exactly.
They don't have to give up any picks in it. Yep. They could work out an extension down the road with Caruso. And they have kind of a leg up. I didn't even tell you about this.
What did you tell me about?
Caruso, totally forgot, knows Mark Daigneault well. In fact, Daigneault was his coach in the G League. The 2016-17 season, Caruso played for the OKC Blue. And to this day, Caruso said that Daigneault's a friend and mentor. Mm. So he's full going circle somewhere that he has a respect for the coach. Mm-hmm. You're playing for a team that's a contender, up and coming, and you can be this like vet influence there and play a major role.
I think when you think of Alex Caruso, or so a lot of people might, you think about that dog mentality. He's scrappy. He gets everywhere. But he's so much more than that, especially how his game has evolved over the years of being more and more polished. I think playing around LeBron James made him that much better of a basketball player. And it's like, okay, well, what is he going to do when he doesn't have that? He's still capable of moving without the basketball, shooting the basketball, finding his teammates, being a scrappy defender, and adds just so much value in so many different roles. Yeah. That yes, it's huge for OKC, and I just don't want to discredit also what Josh Giddey is, or who he is as a basketball player too, because I think his ability to see the floor, his vision, dropping dimes. I mean, I think that's sometimes what people go, oh, but is that all he does? It's like, no, what that can allow is an offense to explore so many different options and have so much success. But sometimes it's situational and your time is done in certain places, and his time is done with OKC, and they had to make an upgrade.
He's still 21 years old. I think the biggest issue and the huge looming question about Giddey is, will he ever be able to shoot it? Because now the book's out on him.
Yeah.
Teams weren't just playing off of him during the playoffs.
Yeah.
This was happening during the regular season. And to your point, like, he is gifted with the ball in his hands. And I think that's going to be a massive opportunity for him in Chicago. That wasn't the case anymore in OKC, right? SGA is orchestrating a lot of things. You got mm-hmm. Jalen Williams there. You have other guys who could handle the rock. That wasn't going to be his role. And if he's playing off ball, teams are going to sag off, not defend him.
Yeah.
And the greatest weapon for him is, all right, he's got the ball in his hands. Can he make shit happen? He has shown he could do that. But for him to be a legit NBA player for years to come, he's going to be able to have to knock down shots yep. and not be a sieve defensively. For a guy his size, he's got to be better defensively.
Yeah.
If he can't do those things, then, well, good luck in the NBA, but he's still 21.
And that's, I was going to say, and I don't see why he won't be able to. You know, if he has the right people around him to put him in a situation to become that better shooter, to become that better defender, you know, to work with what he already has as a player. I mean, he's a smart player, high basketball IQ. His instincts are there. So at 21 years old, why can't you just grow from there?
I want to go back to the Thunder angle on this because you just think about their defensive versatility now. I mean, Lou Dort is one of the best defensive players in the league. Mm-hmm. Should be an all-defensive guy. Doesn't get that credit just yet, but you see what he's able to do out there.
Yeah.
Alex Caruso is that. SGA is near the top of the NBA in deflections and steals. Cason Wallace, during his rookie year, showed the ability to go out there and defend. You know what Chet can do defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the three-point shooting is there with Caruso now. Like, he was a 40%.
Yeah.
And he was taking a healthy number of attempts. Dort has become a better three-point shooter, too. What does this do for OKC in the West now? Like, how scary are they with the fact that they have so much versatility defensively?
Well, I think that's where, when you ask me, are you depressed? Like, selfishly, I was thinking about me.
And Sacramento.
And Sacramento. Yeah, yeah. And what, and how the West only got better last year and how it seems to be staying the same right now. You know, season just ended, right? Officially. But at the same time, like, I think especially when you look at some of these teams and when they take a leap defensively, when you were a team that had one of the fastest pace offenses that was so efficient and all these things, when they got to the playoffs, you're just seeing like, that's not going to be good enough.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
only is that not going to be good enough, things are going to be looking different in Sacramento. Most likely, maybe no Malik, who knows, you know, with Kevin Huerter and wherever this team is thinking about possibly what they're possibly going to do with him and just some other pieces as well. What are they going to do at number 13 in the draft? My point to all of this is whatever I'm saying right now, I can only imagine what other teams and people are saying about the teams that they cover and or root for in the Western Conference when you already see Sam Presti working his magic and making tweaks to make his already good OKC team better.
We saw what Boston was able to do as a team, right? They obviously have two absolute studs in Tatum and Brown, but it's the pieces around them too. The versatility yeah. that they have defensively with Derek White, mm-hmm. with Drew Holiday, with Porzingis, and you're starting to see it with OKC. They may not be at that level yet, but they still have the resources to make other moves. They've got cap space. They start to get some legit experience. It's going to be nasty. It's going to be disgusting. And this is a home run move by Sam Presti. Doesn't have to give up a pick. And if that's my biggest criticism with the Bulls. Like, I understand Chicago. Like, they need to pick some sort of path. They've done this for a while now with Vucevic, DeRozan, LaVine, Caruso, Lonzo Ball got hurt. Who knows about his future? It looks like they may be picking their path now. And so they got moves to make. So Caruso's an expiring deal. You want to get something back for him. So they're taking a swing on Josh Giddey to see if they can get something out of him. But I was just surprised they couldn't get one of Presti's picks. You're telling me they couldn't be like, hey, Presti, you got like 800 of them. You can't just give us one. Caruso was going to have a huge market out there. Think about all the contending teams who would love to have him.
Yeah.
And you would think that the Bulls would have been able to get a little more out of it. I know it's challenging because he's an expiring deal, but it's still a huge asset.
Maybe Sam Presti is like manipulative and evil behind the scenes and we just don't know
dude,
it.
Dude, like House of Cards shit.
Well, that's like just like creepy weird, but no one's dying. I doubt anyone's dying.
Dude, if Presti killed someone, would you be shocked?
Yeah,
I mean, think about all the players he's had. Durant, Westbrook, Harden,
oh my
SGA.
God. He pushed them into
Paul the, George.
What is it? The subway? Yeah. Whatever. One of his first
dude,
kills.
Dude, he's doing something weird. Yeah. And he's been doing it for a long time.
We need to investigate.
Dude, it's not fair. So the Bulls made a trade today, sending Alex Caruso to Oklahoma City in exchange for Josh Giddey. And we've been hearing Zach LaVine rumors for what? A year and a half? The Bulls are shopping him. Well, there was a report earlier today that they have had conversations with Sacramento, Philly, and other teams and have come up with like 15 different trade proposals. Basically, it seems like they're willing to donate Zach LaVine to another team. Sacramento gets brought up a lot. Mm-hmm. And Morgan, I got to be honest, I struggle with Zach LaVine in Sacramento. There Don't is a part of me that I could talk myself into it.
For sure.
But I have some major concerns as well.
And let me guess, the first major concern is health.
Yeah, I mean, he's been under the knife a lot. He's had some surgeries. Dude,
that should 100% be your first. And the reason why health should be your first number one with all of this is because if that was the case in Sacramento, you are not the Boston Celtics in Sacramento. You do not have all the depth in the world. So then when one of your big pieces are out, that is a huge part of your identity. Although you want to say next man up mentality, you might not have the actual tier of players. So if Zach LaVine was unhealthy and traded to Sacramento at some point in unhealthy, even at some point during the season, the entire identity changes of the team. You know what I mean? And it's just something to look at.
It's not just health. It's the contract that comes with it. So next season, he makes $43 million. The season after that, it's 45.9. And then he's got a player option for the 26-27 season that would pay him just under $49 million. Of course, the Kings are still paying Fox right now, 34.8, and then $37 million. They have to figure out maybe an extension with him down the road. Sabonis is tied up through the 27-28 season at 40, 43.6, 46.7, and $49 million. Oh, and by the way, you're probably going to have to come up with some sort of rookie scale extension for Keegan Murray down the road. So there's a lot of money that's going to have to be thrown out there in team building, which gets a little more complicated with new collective bargaining agreement too,
money.
With the first apron, second apron, all that stuff. Look, it's hard to even have a Zach LaVine discussion without acknowledging like the health concerns. Like he's had ACL problems. He's had knee surgery. Remember last year he had the ankle injury and that led to eventually him having surgery on his foot in February. They announced that he was going to be out 4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Now in March they said he's progressing a little faster than maybe they thought. He's like ahead of schedule. But the reality is he's probably not going to be able to play basketball until, I don't know, August.
29 years old. And
going to be 30.
Going to be 30.
Or he might be 30.
No, his birthday's in March. I just looked.
Okay.
So 29 years old. And he has had all these health issues, concerns throughout his entire career in the NBA. You know, you can go down the line last year, 25 games. Year before that, I know you tried to convince me with this. You're like, 77 games. I'm like, whoa, amazing. So fun. And when he is out there on the floor, I mean, we can now talk about the good and why this man was getting the contract that he was getting and why people are so intrigued with Zach LaVine. And I think you look at everything from his athletic ability, being able to shoot the basketball, his ability to get to the rim, being another scorer on any team in the NBA. But you really look in Sacramento and you go, okay, you have him next to De'Aaron, Sabonis, and like, let's say Keegan even keeps growing.
Yeah.
It does excite you.
That's a dynamic offensive team.
I understand it.
And I think when you look at what really hurt Sacramento, especially late in the season, is like, who was going to go and get another bucket?
Right.
You know, it was Fox. Monk was out. Who else? Who else? You're looking around and that became problematic. Zach LaVine, when he's right, can really help you. There are obviously challenges too, because you start talking about 30 years old and the surgeries that he's had. What happens when the athleticism starts to go? Is he as dynamic at that point? I do think him being in Sacramento, if he was right, and I'd have to know his medicals, he'd have to give that to the Kings front office to pour through and understand where he is at physically. But like, he'd be playing more off ball, you know? And I think that would almost enhance his ability as an offensive player and take some pressure off of him. I think the other challenge too is from a defensive standpoint, he's athletic enough to like be on ball on somebody, but there are some challenges with him off ball and staying locked in, maybe not always in the right spots defensively, and that Correct. Can be problematic as too.
And it can be, but it can also be like how we keep talking about situational. And can someone like Mike Brown bring that out of them because, you know, you're put into his system and you have to do it the right way. And sometimes a new scenery can help even a player feel more inspired and want to do something different. And who knows if Sacramento could be that place. I mean, it's been that place for other players in history when this team
yeah.
had a good run as well. And you look at his 3-point percentage, just career wise, 38% from three. And, you know, it's not like he's playing. He's had one season where he played 82 games, and that was his second year in the league with Minnesota. And so I guess my whole point to this being is like, you know, you talk about changing his role and not having the ball as much, or maybe playing a little bit more off ball. Is that something at 29 years old that Zach LaVine is wanting and willing to adjust even mentally?
I think he's ready to be in a better situation. You know, he's been in tough situations, especially with all the injuries that the Bulls have had. You know, he's been hurt. Patrick Williams has been hurt. Lonzo Ball, the list goes on. It's been tough for Chicago. But the reality is there's a reason he's available. Yeah. There's a reason why a team hasn't just jumped at the opportunity to trade for him either. It's yep. because of everything we just talked about with the injury history and the money.
Money.
But you start looking about some of the other guys who could be available out there. You know, Brandon Ingram has been talked a lot about. He has some similar injuries. Like, he misses a ton of games too. I think the big difference for Brandon Ingram in my mind is he's still young. He's 25, 26 years old.
Yep.
And I still think he's got a lot left in the tank.
And what he shows offensively and defensively on both sides, right? His length alone poses as such a threat. And you see that being such a, like, the Kings lack so much length, so much size, especially when they were trying to beat the Pelicans six times and they lost six times in this last season. And a lot of that had to do because of the length of the Pelicans. And you saw that even with like the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you're just seeing how you do need to make sure you are adding that within your roster. So yeah, I understand the importance of BI.
This is a really interesting spot for the Kings to be in because the West is not getting worse. In fact,
it's not.
Today it got better with Caruso going to OKC, right? And the teams behind Sacramento this year, like San Antonio. What are they going to look like? What moves could they make? They've got cap space. Houston, they look like they're going to be active in the trade market. They showed some promise last year. Memphis, you can't be sleeping on Memphis. They had a terrible year last year because of all those injuries.
Yeah.
They're back in the fold.
Are we at a point, too, where maybe the last season, when the organization, the Kings organization, ran it back. Mm-hmm. They kept using that, or whoever did, they ran it back basically, even though they wanted to say, hey, we got Chris Duarte and Sasha Vezenkov. Things that just didn't work out.
They moved the needle.
They did not move the needle. And so now, when this fan base and people that are covering this organization, this team, are seeing this Zach LaVine chatter, do you think more and more people are like, get it done, get something done, because it was such a standstill for too long, and you're just realizing that you got to make sure you're getting something done. Otherwise, Sam Presti is going to be working behind the scenes and making sure to be selling, buying everyone.
I mean,
trading. There we go.
There has to be pressure. There has to, when you have not been really active last offseason, last trade deadline, the trade deadline before that. There's got, especially if you just watch the playoffs. If you watch the playoffs now, you'd be like, oh, this Kings team, how are they going to win a series? Maybe depending on the matchup, but like these teams are really good.
Really good.
And so I feel like you need Fox and Sabonis to be at their level. They're Correct. In their prime. You need Keegan to take a step, and there has to be additional moves made. Mm-hmm. You could be excited about Keon Ellis, but I'm at the point where I've already told myself Malik's gone.
I know.
I'm accepting that. And if the reality is different, we can get there later.
Oh my God, then we can celebrate.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, okay, they've got the 13th pick. There's some interesting guards there. Rob Dillingham. Yep. Love his game. I know he's an undersized guy, but could he be like a Malik Monk clone down the road? Maybe not right away. So there's some interesting prospects at 13 that you could take. You could use that pick and trade. But they're going to have to make some sort of substantial move to move the needle if they want to win a playoff series.
That's it. It has to be done.
There's risk in that too.
And because I could take a step back, and I love Under the Radar guys. I love when Under the Radar guys end up working out. New situation works out for them. New system works out for them. It is one of my favorite things to watch all around the NBA. Especially love it when it's here in Sacramento. But I feel like that doesn't happen as much. It doesn't pan out as much with Under the Radar guys in Sacramento. So, like, if there isn't a big name that is being traded for to come to Sacramento, are there enough Under the Radar guys to get in Sacramento to make something actually different and change for this team in the Western Conference?
If Monk leaves, you need someone that can go get you a bucket.
Yep.
You need someone that's going to put pressure on the rim, a playmaker. He checks some boxes for Sacramento. Losing him is a big loss. Then you think about upgrading that four spot. You need more size. It's just not one thing for Sacramento. And that's what makes it really challenging. Monty McNair has to be aggressive this offseason. Going back to the original thing with this video.
Yeah.
So you say no on Zach LaVine. Can I just ask you this?
Wait, did I say no?
Well, I kind of got that vibe from you. He's hurt all the time. What? If the right deal, let's just say if the Bulls were willing to give up some draft compensation to sell you on it, and you didn't have to mortgage anything because of his deal. Would you be willing? It's still a risk no matter what. Would you be more interested in that?
The reason, yes. I think because last year wasn't good enough, and I saw this team. We don't know all the details of what happened with Pascal Siakam behind the scenes. We saw, obviously, with the Athletic piece that there was something about, if they weren't going to, offer him the max contract, then he doesn't want to resign. Maybe he doesn't even want to be here in Sacramento. Whatever it was. When that happened, and then nothing happened at the trade deadline, it was an oh shit moment. Like, if you are not getting something done, someone else will. Another team will. And Zach LaVine might not be the answer, but at the same time, I'm not about screwing up the future for the Sacramento Kings. But if there are pieces right now that you do not feel like you value going forward within this system, then make a change. And then guess what? You make a change again if you need to at some other point. If this doesn't pan out this season. But I think it is, you're seeing more and more like you can't run it back. You got to make sure you're making tweaks, making changes.
If you have Fox and Sabonis, you got to maximize the primes.
Yeah.
This is it. Let's see what they can do. The Lakers coaching search is officially over.
It is all over.
It's been a roller coaster ride, I think. You know, it's like, it's going to be JJ. Oh, wait, Dan Hurley, big decision. JK, I want more money from UConn. Bye. And now they go back to J.J. Redick. He's the first time NBA head coach, and the first time he ever gets a gig is with the L.A. Lakers. Wow. So J.J. Obviously played in the league.
Obviously.
He was on the A-team for ESPN on their NBA coverage. His podcast blew up the last couple of years. And then this year, debuts a podcast with LeBron James.
It was so good.
Now he is the head coach of the LA Lakers. What's your first reaction to hearing that JJ Redick will be coaching the Lakers?
Let me humanize the situation. I know, because I think about this a lot when I see people try to do so many different things, and I'm like, what are you doing? Sometimes there could be jealousy involved. Sometimes there's a little bit of anger because I feel like they might not be great at something, whatever it may be. With JJ, he's proven to not only be a good NBA player, to be a good broadcaster, to be good podcaster, which I mean, two different skill sets of what he was doing. And so why not try to be a great coach? You know, there's a lot of pressure on him, and I think this is a very interesting situation to put yourself in, but like I put myself in these shoes and I go, yeah, I would want to try and be great at everything. And if I love the game and I'm addicted to the game this much, why not take another level, take the next step into like being like, wait, let me see if I can do that and be great at that too.
It's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
JJ has interviewed for other jobs the last couple of years, and when his name was first brought up, I'm like, well, that's interesting. You knew he had the coaching bug. He knows the game, which is great. But this is a completely different thing. Oh. Okay, you're a head coach. It's a little different than coaching his kids' teams, which he was doing.
A little different.
Just a little different, okay? I mean, I think on one hand, the good news is it seems like he has a good relationship with LeBron. Now, it's also different coaching LeBron and dealing with the highs and lows of an NBA season, the personalities, dealing with a coaching staff, dealing with players, then sitting down with LeBron on Zoom, sipping some wine and going over some of LeBron's favorite basketball plays.
Yeah.
Right. There's no pressure there. Yeah. You guys are just talking hoops. Now, you got to be able to go out there and execute. And they have high expectations for his first job to be this job. Holy shit, man. I mean, I don't think anyone looks at the Lakers today and goes, oh, they are a championship level team. It's a long offseason. Hell, they still have to figure out LeBron's contract and all that, but he's going to be back there. The reality is, I don't think they are what they were last year, but they're not as good as being a conference finals team the year before.
Before I get into the team aspect of everything, I remember when, when JJ, what his name was, in the mix for some of the other teams, Toronto, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I remember there's so many times like, but there's so much more he doesn't get as a coach, like all the different things that he's going to have to do day to day. And I'm like, why wouldn't he get that? Right. Like he's been around it. He has been around at a very high level. Like he obviously understands it if he's going in this direction. Now going to the team that he is going to, the organization that he's going to, that's where everything is like, whoa, take a step back. Fascinating. Because you look at it being LeBron James, what, last couple of years, maybe, in the NBA, I'm just going to assume. And I think where there's maybe less pressure about it, though, Deuce, is that there's not enough time for JJ, in my opinion, to really screw up, to be like, okay, the Lakers are just going to want to go in a different direction because LeBron's angry and LeBron wants some change. And I know we say this about every single coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron has nothing to do with it. LeBron, he has nothing to do with it. Like, we're not naive to the situation. Like, even if he doesn't ultimately have the final say, there's a lot of LeBron involved in these things. And I think when it comes to JJ, I think there's a little bit less pressure off because LeBron will be ending his career soon. And I don't think his goal would be like, oh, let me make sure to get rid of JJ first so I can finish off my career with one more head coach. You know?
You're saying there's not a pressure of him maybe getting fired after like a year or two.
Correct.
But there's an immense amount of pressure for being the Lakers coach. Like, there is hype around this. Remember in the first couple of weeks after they let go of Darvin Ham, there was one report that said, hey, the Lakers kind of think he could be Pat Riley. It's like, Pat Riley? Yeah, a Hall of Fame coach and executive? Like, we're putting a lot of pressure on this guy.
Yeah.
And for JJ, maybe he vibes off that pressure. Maybe he loves those expectations because it would have made more sense for him to take on a situation had he been offered for a team like Charlotte. Let's say Charlotte offers him the job. You're taking over a young team.
Yeah.
And it's Charlotte. Like, there's a little more patience. JJ's going to be talked about every single day.
Every single day.
Even more to this now because the guy was doing a podcast, you know, it's like, oh, was there something behind that? Was this the plan all along? There's all that talk, but there's just more pressure. He's been a high profile talent. He was, you know, at Duke and he got so much attention when he played at Duke, the whole talk about him and Adam Morrison back in the day. So it's not like he's unfamiliar with the pressure of being on good NBA teams and what comes with it, but now you're the head coach.
Yeah.
Okay. He was never the star player on the team. Okay. You are the head coach of the LA Lakers. It seems like it's going to be a challenging job, and I'm fascinated to see how he handles it. I do think the things going in his favor is nowadays you need to be able to have legit relationships. And it's clear to me, not just with LeBron, but through his podcast, to be honest, dude, he's connected with NBA players all over the league and coaches. He's had conversations. And you know, if he's having conversations on camera, off camera, he's getting to know guys. He didn't play that long ago. Like, he's been plugged into the league.
And the other thing is, he wasn't, I feel like there was a few times toward the end when he was not necessarily an analyst and he was just put on like First Take or whatever. Yeah. But for the most part, he was not a hot take guy talking shit about players. If anything, I think he would talk shit about some other head coaches or have some things to say about them. So like,
it was funny you say that though, because today someone mentioned that he didn't vote Anthony Davis on the all defensive team this past year.
I love it. Well, maybe he has some pointers of where he wants him to take his game defensively as well. But yeah, I think all in all, you talk about relationships. So right there, like, you know, not talking mad shit about all these different players, whatever, blah, blah. But then also his ability to connect. What there's a lot of importance on who he surrounds himself with when it comes to his coaching staff.
Yep.
And I say this because I think JJ is such an X's and O's basketball junkie, you know, smart basketball mind. And I could listen to it all day and I love it. And I'm sure a lot of players can respect that as well. But who are going to be some of the other people that maybe like make it come together? Or if something isn't being respected over here, how you gain that respect because you have someone else on your staff to help navigate some of these different situations. You're dealing with so many different personalities. Again, things that I'm sure he can figure out. But got to just talk about it.
Some of the names that Shams reported who could be on JJ's staff include former NBA head coach and Trailblazers assistant Scott Brooks, Rajon Rondo, and ex-Laker and current Mavs assistant Jared Dudley, and possibly Sam Cassell. You're right. You're going to have some experience with JJ, and he's got to be able to trust those guys.
Yeah.
Get that staff together. It's going to be interesting.
It is. It's very, I don't know. It's very interesting.
It's not just LeBron. It's how do you get the most out of Anthony Davis? I mean, how many times were we watching the Lakers this year and wondering like, okay, is Darvin Ham doing enough to get AD involved? This guy should be a matchup nightmare in this league. It just seemed like there was so much stagnant play from this Lakers team, relying so much on LeBron at times. And it's like, bro, we cannot rely on LeBron James to have the ball in his hands all the time, make every decision, do everything out there.
Yeah, and I think one of the toughest jobs for a lot of coaches in this league is when you do have to take on a superstar, a Luka, KD, you know, wherever it may be. But when it comes to LeBron James and the relationship he already has with JJ, you're just thinking, okay, we're going in the right direction with this. You're making LeBron happy. You're giving JJ this huge opportunity. And I go back to thinking about someone like Steve Nash when he was obviously already in the coaching circles a little bit because of goal. I mean, if you want to call it that, basketball ops.
But
okay.
Behind the scenes, but he was a coach.
Yeah. So okay, he was getting touches somehow, maybe, if you want to call it that. So then when he went into his situation, obviously there was a lot of pressure, but there was also so many different big names. And you have no idea what that relationship or connection even was. And it felt like such chaos in Brooklyn, where with the Lakers, sure, it feels like there's chaos. They're losing. LeBron's getting older. What are you going to do? Well, you got a guy that's been around LeBron, that's been around the game, that has been talking about this game right now. You know, he's not talking about in the past, back in my day, this is what we did. He understands what's happening in today's game. And yeah, it could be good. What do you have?
LA Times put out a whole list of records of coaches who became first-time head coaches without any previous experience. Ooh. Steve Nash, you mentioned.
Okay.
His record, 101-76.
Okay.
Not terrible.
No.
It seems like it would have been worse. Before that, Derek Fisher. Remember when Phil Jackson hired Derek Fisher after losing out on Steve Kerr? Uh-huh. Derek Fisher, 40-96. Steve Kerr, of course, we know he's done. Hall of Famer at this point. 618-315. Jason Kidd got the Nets gig in 2013, went 49-47 before dipping out there. Before that, you had Mark Jackson, Vinny Del Negro, Isaiah Thomas, Doc Rivers, Larry Bird, going back to 1997. So, you know, kind of a mixed bag there, but not like terrible either.
Yeah.
It's going to be fascinating. I think the other thing too that gets brought up, and it's fair, is like these are the moments you do feel bad for like these longtime assistants. I mean, hell, you think about someone on his list as a potential assistant, Sam Cassell. Sam's gone I've been a prominent assistant. I play in the league. Like, why can't I get a gig?
Yeah.
Because I didn't do a podcast and do TV. Yeah. I think that's frustrating for a lot of guys who paid their dues.
For sure. But Deuce, you and I say this all the time with how we do things. Everyone's path is different.
Yeah.
And I do believe that like everyone is allowed to take a different path to fulfill their dreams of what they want to do in their careers. And we have that same type of different path when it comes to broadcasting. And so I just really look at it from the outside like that.
Well, one last thing, best case, worst case here. Best case, JJ kills it in LA with the Lakers. Yeah. They compete.
Mm-hmm.
He gets a lot of love. Maybe LeBron retires. He either stays in LA, continues to develop that, or he goes somewhere else. He's got a great reputation, right? Or he flames out.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Well, he goes back to podcasting, does some broadcast. I don't think it would like crush. In fact, it'd probably enhance. It's like, oh, he coached the Lakers for 2 seasons in LA.
Yep.
Even if, you know, seasons. Or whatever. You know what I mean? I don't think it's like a damaging thing to his reputation. I think the pros probably outweigh the cons for him.
Yeah.
But buckle up, JJ. Your life has changed.
Oh, I think he knows.
Your life has changed in a big way. Well, if anything else breaks, you know we'll have a podcast for it. Check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@DeuceandMo. We love you guys, but we gots to go.
You all have a wonderful rest of your day.
See ya.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo, the podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.